All right, our first speaker will be Christine O. Me and her go way back, and I just met her. So come on, Christine.
It's eye level. Short girl problems. I'm an addict. My name's Christine.
Hi,
Christine. Hi. If we can just take a moment for me to kind of not throw up, it would be great. Okay, I am visiting from the Virginia Beach and Tidewater area in Virginia, so I traveled to come visit you guys today. So, can you hear me? Am I in the microphone? If I found that if I can just get through like the first two or three minutes, then God takes over, and I think I'm Dave Chappelle, so it tends to work out well in the end. It just starts out a little rocky. The topic is in times of illness, and you know, I took about an hour kind of quiet time before starting, before coming down here today, and because my inner voice tells me that, number one, nobody's going to come because it's in times of illness, so it's an easy one to get through, and number two, that I really don't have anything to say. Like, what I have to say doesn't really qualify. And it's so crazy that even after being here for a hot minute and doing the work, that that is still my internal dialogue. It's not like that all the time, but it is in times like this. And I have like crippling anxiety, so like I really feel like I want to puke. And, you know, I always talk about, it's kind of like before I was getting ready to get high, like I didn't know if I was going to puke or shit. And that's kind of what it feels like whenever I get up here in front of a group of people. So a little background on me is I grew up in a family. Addiction is our family tree. And I had a lot of childhood trauma. It's very familiar. I think it's probably pretty much everybody else's story as well. And I got clean in 1994, March 31st, 1994. And that was the height of the AIDS epidemic. You know, it was still very, nobody really knew anything about it, and it was like my biggest reservation, my biggest fear was if I test positive for the virus, because in 1994 we were all sweating our freaking AIDS test, man. If you got clean in that time frame, you know. And that was my biggest fear, is that I would test positive, and that was my reservation. I always said, if I test positive, I'm getting high. And my first meeting out of treatment, I was blessed. I got to go to treatment for 18 days. Such a blessing, because I knew. I called my mom. I overdosed on St. Patrick's Day, 1994. And I called my mom and said, I can't stop using, and the drugs aren't working, but I can't stop. And if you don't help me, I'll be dead within 3 days. Like, I just knew. I was totally using against my will, and the only way I was going to stop was death. And but in a moment of grace, that phone call saved my life. That admission of powerlessness to my mother, of all people. And I haven't used since that phone call. So it does work. And you can get clean and stay clean, and relapse doesn't have to be. It's not a requirement to be part of your story. I thought when I got here, anybody I knew that had some time all had relapse stories. So I was like, I got to get one if I'm going to stick around, you know. But I'm living proof that that is not the case. It is a reality, but it's not a requirement. So my first meeting out of treatment, I walk into scared to death, but very determined, because when I got here, y'all, I was done. I was scared to death. I was desperate. I was just done. I knew that I could not use. There was no question over whether I was an addict or if I could use successfully. Like, I just didn't want to die a using addict. And I knew it was get clean and live or use and die. Very simply. And I walked into that meeting, and there was a woman in there sharing that she had just been diagnosed with full-blown AIDS that day with a T-cell count of 7.
Wow.
And for those of you who don't know, that's like, in 1994, that was a death sentence. Like, you're going to be dead in 3 months. So my biggest reservation was addressed in my first meeting at a treatment. And, you know, she owned her own business, a T-shirt business, and she was all talking about, you know, what's wrong with these addicts? You're your addicts at work, and your addicts that don't fucking work, and I need some help, and yada, yada. So I ended up going to her and saying, hey, I need a job. I'll work with you in your business. And I ended up being a caretaker for her through years of living with, she's still alive today, by the way.
No worries.
Decades of dealing with living with AIDS and HIV. So I asked her to be my sponsor, and she was like, have you lost your fucking mind? Like, you know, you're crazy. I just got handed a death sentence and would be dead in 3 months. I fired all my sponsees, and I was like, well, if you got that news and you're not high, you got what I want, period. And she said, okay, these are the things you're going to do, because we didn't get suggestions. We got orders. And she said, you're going to call me every day. You're going to go to a meeting every day. And you are going to shut your legs, quit fucking, spend a lonely night lonely. If you get lonely, talk to God. He'll keep you company. And if you can't do that, I don't have time, because I don't have time. And she had contracted full-blown AIDS in the room to Narcotics Anonymous. So you can get a lot more recovery here. Sometimes we forget that. You know, and a lot of times you're lucky if pregnant is all you get. You know, so you really can get anything you want in Narcotics Anonymous. And a lot more than you bargain for. So I was blessed to learn that in early recovery. So I did take the suggestion or the order to stay out of a relationship and abstinent from sex, because I knew my picker was broke and I would end up picking another one like the last one who was still in the penitentiary. And I did not want to shit where I ate. That was just me. In early recovery, I knew the only way I was going to be able to do this and to live and to stay clean was to be in Narcotics Anonymous. And I just did whatever they told me to do. If they told me to stand on my head in a corner, I'd have done it, just because I didn't pick and choose suggestions. I did everything they told me to do. So I learned how to take care of people with life-threatening illnesses by caring for her. And the area that I came from, we were very strict in the hardcore, in a, you know, complete abstinence and 12 steps. Work the steps or die, motherfucker. That was just how it was. And so we had very strong opinions on any type of medication, whether it be psych drugs or, you know, it was just not open. It was not tolerated. And like I said, very strong opinions. And I was one of those people who had very strong opinions, you know. And what I have come to learn decades later is I had really strong opinions because I didn't have any fucking experience. Because I will tell you, nothing will change an opinion like an experience will. And between a year and 18 months was the hardest stretch of my recovery until I get to 18 years. From a year to 18 months, I started dealing with and looking at some incest survivor work that that was coming up for me. And at that time, I started using food as my tool because I wasn't giving up my clean time for nothing. So I started using food as my tool for control over what went in and out of my body for the first time in my life. And, you know, I got to a place where there was an old timer in our area that would come up to us. I mean, he was kind of intimidating, a little bit scary, but scary guys were my thing. And he would come up and be like, what the disease looked like when it came for you today. Did you even know it when it came? Was it the food? Was it the sex? What did it look like? Because if you didn't know it, it's going to back you in a corner. And so every day I was like, you know, I'm a paranoid meth addict, so I'm like, fuck, it's coming. What did it look like today? That day, you know, for a long time it was the food. And my inner dialogue, as fucked up as it still is, back then was 10 times worse and would tell me, you know, oh, well, you don't have to tell anybody that you're in pain because if you lose enough weight, they'll see it, you know. And then once I got down and I was so small, I was like 89 pounds, you know, and my clothes got bigger because the dialogue told me, oh, well, now you have to hide it or you're going to have to talk about it, you know. And it ended up I had to seek outside help for that issue because I had to learn how to eat again. My body, I once again had crossed that imaginary line of like when the drugs take over. Because I'm going to tell you guys, I had a lot of good fucking nights high, a lot of good nights high. But somewhere I crossed an invisible line where the drugs took over and I no longer had any control over what the disease did with my life. And that same disease did the same thing to me with the food and with bulimia, anorexia. You know, it was, if I put it in my body automatically rejected it. So I had lost any power to keep nutrition and keep food down. So I had to seek outside help for that. And then it was frowned upon to even talk about outside help in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, everybody would be like, outside issue! You know, well, you know what? It is an inside issue, inside me, and it affects my recovery and my life. And if I can't stay clean, nothing outside do matters. Everything I have today, my whole life, will fit in a fucking pipe. Everything. And it can be gone so quick. And so I was seeking outside help. I had to learn how to eat again. And I really did some deep work in therapy for outside help. And everything kind of planed out. I mean, y'all, when it says that, you know, four steps separates the men from the boys. It took me 4.5 years to do my four step. 4.5 years to do my first four step. I don't recommend that to anyone. I'm not suggesting that to anyone. This is my experience. I felt for the longest time I was being judged because with the amount of time that I had, I should be farther along. You know, I should be done by now or whenever. And I learned whenever I use the word should, like I'm living by somebody else's standard. I don't know where that standard came from. I don't know who created the shoulds of the world, but somewhere in my brain, it's like now I ask myself whenever I say should, like, is that my standard? Where did that come from? But I needed every year, every minute of that 4.5 years to do that fourth step. I ended up in a position to where I was able to confront my abuser, and a 3-minute conversation like changed the course of my life. And I did not go in there thinking, oh, I'm going to hold him accountable, yada, yada. It was one of those things where I had an uncle who's never said anything profound in his whole life tell me, if you leave here with what you brought here, you're going to carry it for the rest of your life. Because I had said, I can't be here. And he said, you will carry it for the rest of your life. And he said, you need to go in and say that you need a moment alone. And I walked in there, this room full of people, and I said, I need a moment alone with my grandfather who had abused me for years. And everybody left the room. Not only did they leave the room, they went and stood in the yard. Okay, so that was my, everybody knew. And while it was happening, they either were unwilling or incapable of doing anything to stop it. And I just looked at him and I said, you know, I've spent the better part of my life trying to figure out who I am and put myself back together because of the things that you've done to me. And I don't want to hate you anymore. And I want you to die in peace. And, you know, I hadn't pre-planned like what I thought his response might be. Because I'd never had planned actually even being in that position. My plan had always been anything that came to him would just be, am I going to his funeral to make sure the motherfucker's really dead? That was like my biggest contemplation. So as long as we follow the path, man, it just takes us and puts us there where we're supposed to go, even when it feels uncomfortable. And he told me, he said, I know what I did was wrong, and I want to die in peace. And that was it. And I'm going to tell you, I felt like an entire fucking house had been lifted off of me. And when I walked out of the house that day, I was like, you know what? I was no longer in a place where I was a victim. Like, my life and my circumstances, I didn't go through all that stuff because of him or because of what he had done to me. Like, now all that stuff was mine. And I had a say in whether or not I was going to get better with it, what areas I was going to work on. So I continued to do work in therapy for years with these issues. And I did struggle with the food again as far as the control. But at 18 years clean, right around 18 years clean, like now I call it the breakdown. It's when I had a breakdown. And I was 38 years old, about 18 years clean, and I felt crazier than I ever felt when I was using. I had like, and I have a mouth, and I have a temper, and I always joke, my mom's a redhead from Baltimore, I get it from her, and I had no filter, and everything was a knee-jerk reaction. You know, and I knew something was wrong. I knew something was wrong, and I like laid on the sofa, and I'm married. My husband would come in and out, and he would go to work, and I felt like I was in this black hole, and he would walk by the hole every day and peek in and then just go on about his life. And I remember laying on the sofa and looking at a glass that was sitting on the coffee table and thinking to myself, I need to go put that in the sink before he gets home, because he's going to know that I've done absolutely nothing again all day. And the thought of having to get up and take that glass and put it in the sink was so overwhelming and daunting that I just cried. And I thought, I was like, something is really wrong. If this is what life is going to be like, I'm getting high, you know? And I laid on that sofa, I kept waiting for it to pass. I did step work, I did therapy, I kept waiting for it to pass, because I had this opinion about getting outside help in a chemical manner. You know, I didn't know what was going on, but I just knew something was wrong. And I started with my gynecologist. I was like, you know, it's hormones, maybe something is going on there. And it turns out I was in early menopause and I didn't know it. But I went to a doctor and he was like, well, we're going to test your hormones and they're within normal range. And I was like, dude, I don't know what normal range is, but I'm going to tell you, this is not a normal range for me. Like, I've done enough emotional work that I know the difference between emotional pain and a physiological imbalance. And I'm telling you, something is not right. Something is very wrong here. And he was just like, there's not anything I can do for you. So I, just like I went to the dope man, I would keep going until I found what I needed. I did the same thing with doctors. I kept going till I found a doctor who would listen to me. And because believe it or not, I saw it on Oprah Winfrey show, like you're your own best advocate. So you never know where the frickin' message is coming from. But that day it came for me on the Oprah Winfrey show, your own best medical advocate. So I started with the gynecologist and found someone who would listen to me. I mean, she was amazing. She sat there and listened to me cry and snot and tell her all this stuff and just be totally erratic in my behavior for about 30 minutes. She did some blood work. She came back in. She told me to stand up. She gave me a hug and said, it only gets worse. So, but I was so relieved in the fact that, okay, she has heard me. She's going to help me. And we started on some hormones, and that helped for a little while. But one thing about it is, and I know there's a lot of men in the room, and you're probably thinking, menopause don't apply to me, but aging bodies apply to all of us, especially when we've done the damage that we've done to them in the earlier years of our lives. When you have body parts in your body expiring as you're walking through life, like we know, we feel it. And so I still knew I was struggling with being able to function in my life. And hormones control a lot of things. And menopause and hormones and depression and anxiety all kind of go hand in hand. And they all kind of present. They're like the same family. And I will tell you that I felt crazier when I had untreated menopause and depression than I ever felt when I was the highest of highs on meth. And I can't even fathom like going back to that place and being there again. I remember what it felt like thinking, if this is how it's going to be, I'm getting high. And so I was not open to treatment for depression because I had all these opinions from early recovery, and I knew my friends and the people in my support group were not going to be open to any type of psych meds or, and you know, I had done all that deep work, all that decade of incest and deep work and never had to have been and never had to be medicated. So I'm like, why now? You know? But my opinions on it kept me on a couch for months and months waiting for it to pass, and it didn't pass. And it reminded me of when the drug stopped working, like NA stopped working for me in this area of my life, because NA keeps us clean and brings us messages and a path to heal the fractured pieces of ourselves that aren't done in this setting. But like I said, if I don't stay clean, none of that stuff is going. I don't have the opportunity to do anything else. And so my husband had even said, I went and saw my therapist that I had done all my deep work with, and I told her like what was going on and that I had started hormone therapy, but it wasn't still, I knew it just it wasn't right. Something was still very wrong, and she said, you're clinically depressed. And it is my personal opinion and my professional opinion that you will end up on medication. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to try like an organic diet first. And she said, and I applaud you for everything I know you're going to try. But I am telling you that I really believe you're going to end up on medication. And I couldn't wrap my head around it. And I went home and I was talking to my husband and I said, well, Martha thinks that I'm clinically depressed and that I'm going to end up on medication. And my husband is not one of us and doesn't practice regular self-assessment, but I also don't have to worry about him going on a run and cleaning out the fucking bank account, so I'll take it. Pick your battles. He said, I just wish it would come from someone that we trusted. Yeah. And I thought to myself, there's really no one walking the earth that I trusted more than this woman because of what she had already walked me through, the deepest, greatest pains of my life. And it was then, and I still get chill bumps today, when I knew I'm going to have to open my mind as part of self-care. And I did, and it was difficult, and I was scared to death, you know. And now I am in a place where I'm like, oh my gosh, I lived so hard for so long when I really didn't have to, based on opinions, without experience, and based on like what I had learned in early recovery. And I didn't feel, even though I had decades clean, I didn't feel comfortable talking about it in meetings. I didn't talk to everybody in my support group about it because I knew it was not going to be accepted in my peer group, you know. And then I finally got to the place where I started sharing in meetings. I don't go into great detail about it because some of the things that I have to do to take care of myself is not going to be welcome information. And I started telling people, like, you know, Narcotics Anonymous, we don't prescribe medication. We don't have any opinion on outside issues. We don't have opinions on medication, and we're not trained and qualified for that. Even though there are individuals in the room who work in the field, when they're in a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous, that's not who they are. They're Joe addict just like me. Like, they're not diagnosing people in the room. They're not writing prescriptions. They're not, they might bail you out of jail, but they're not going to represent you in court. Like, we start here with just getting clean and staying clean. And all that other stuff is extra. And I know that I was one of those people who had told people, oh, don't take medication, you know, just teetotaler, do it. And, you know, that kills people. That kills people when untrained addicts in a room have an opinion about what someone should or shouldn't do for their medical or mental health, says do this or don't do that, we're killing people. It is so dangerous. And, you know, I started sharing with people when I first started talking about having to be medicated for the first time in my recovery. And I know people would come to me, and I was like, look, if you have experience to share with me, I'm totally open to your experience. But if all you're bringing to me is your opinion on the matter, shut the fuck up. I got nothing. Like, your opinion is not welcome here, because it took me so long to get to a place where I was okay with what I had to do to take care of myself. And, you know, as I'm still aging, it's still getting worse, and there has to be adjustments. And I feel like sometimes I don't know. Is it the hormones? Is it, you know, do we have to do antidepressants? Do we, you know, I feel like sometimes my medical care is we're just throwing shit at the wall, seeing what's going to stick, because it's all just a practice, you know, and having to accept that that's okay today, as long as I don't give up and I don't get high. I just keep walking forward. And through the steps, I have learned how to really be in tune with myself and my body and how I feel. And I have learned the difference between what is emotional pain and what a physiological imbalance feels like. I am not perfect in it, but sometimes I know when to wait for something to pass and how to recognize when it's not passing, that I need to take better care of myself. And, you know, it's important that we all talk about this stuff in here. I know that there are always that group of addicts that will take it and run with it. Like, I got a medical marijuana card. I don't, but somebody will come up and say, oh, that girl who spoke, she said, this is what I got to do to take care of myself, so I'm going to do this. I got no opinion on that. I know for me, that's a hard no. That for me, that it's a hard no. but I don't get to say what is okay and not okay for someone else in their life, working with their sponsor and their medical professionals and their diagnosis. We have stuff. We all have a story and stuff going on behind us that nobody is aware of. And how we present it on the outside is never really how it feels inside. So, and if you read, we have great, the IPs like are not talked about enough. There's mental health and recovery. There is in times of illness. I mean, there is medication and recovery. So if you find yourself in a position that you have to seek outside help and you have to take medication, whether it's for a surgery or, and I'm not talking, I mean, there are IPs for replacement medication, replacement therapy as well. If you have to take medication in recovery and you have medical diagnoses, like there's information NA provides to you, and it is different. And to me, even reading it, the tone is different than the energy that I've experienced in rooms when the topic is broached. So just know that the resources are there for us, and it's totally okay if somebody wants to give you their opinion on a medical situation for you, that you can say, do you have experience? Don't bring me your opinion. I may listen to you, but I probably won't, because I need experience with this. And I am so grateful to have been here. Is our next guy here yet?
Yeah.
Yay! Okay. Because I think I've gone over time a little bit. But thank you guys so much for allowing me to come up here and talk about this. Oh, I do have one funny story for all you guys in the room who are like, menopause, I got nothing for it. I was sitting in a meeting, and I was just feeling so powerless and overwhelmed, and I felt like my body was just rejecting my spirit, and I felt crazy as shit. So I'm sitting in a noon meeting on a Wednesday, and I'm talking about how crazy I am, and you know, it's hit or miss when they start you on medications, on what's going to work and what's not going to work, and you're already dangling by a thread. And there was Gene C, a man named Gene C was sitting beside me, and he's like this big older man of color, and he looks at me, he was the next person to share, and he goes, you know, they're treating me for testicular or prostate cancer with estrogen, he said, and I know exactly what you're talking about. He said, those hot flashes start at the bottom of my feet and come all the way up and blow right out the top of my head. I know exactly what you're talking about. And it is like one, I told him, I was like, Gene, today you are my most fucking favorite person in the world. Because never in a million years would I have thought that it would have been the big older gentleman sitting beside me who knew exactly where I was, who was the one that made me feel like I wasn't alone and how I was feeling inside my body. So sometimes we tend to judge people from the outside. You know, we never know where the message and the love is going to come from. And I know I can't get it if it doesn't come out. So once again, thanks for allowing me to be here. And that's all I got. Thanks.
Good job.
Hi, my name is Antonio Manatti.
Hey,
I want to thank the subcommittee and the people that asked me to come down here to share my experience, strength, and hope. And I think the topic is illness and recovery. And I have some experience on that. And a little about myself. When I got here, I met a young lady. I married her. We've been married the whole time until she passed away. Last night I've been running around all northern Alabama. Here I am. tonight, today. Real simple. I got clean March 21st, 1996. And next month will be 29 years for me in this process. Yes, I came down here 15 years ago with my wife. She is no longer here with us. And that was a good time for us here. I'm grateful for the predecessors that came before me, because I witnessed some things that is beyond belief, and I wanted that to happen for me, and that was recovery. I don't know if seeing it with your own eyes that will do it for you, or just having somebody else share their experience, strength, and hope, and how it happened in their process, and why they continue to stay here, right? So when I got here, you had some people here that told me if I wanted to stay here, I needed to get locked and loaded on this program and not locked and loaded on some female. So I was sick and I needed to sit up front. And that's what I did. I did that for 5.5 years. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of distraction in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. And what I learned about the disease of addiction is locked and loaded on a fixed idea and ain't got nothing to do with drugs. And make you a straight up fucking woman whore, man whore in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. But we don't want to say we are because we're doing things that makes us feel good. Because I don't want to look in the inside. So, speeding up a little bit, I was at home and my wife came home and said, I got something to tell you. And I said, what you want to tell me? She said, I got good news and I got bad news. I said, what's the bad news? She said, I got cancer. She's 17 years clean, working in the field. And I'm like, what's the good news? She said, it can be treated. How that makes you feel? I said, let me get some time to process this. And I went in the back room and I just laid there. And I'm like, this can't be for real. You know, and it happened 2 weeks after her 50th birthday. And she said, what a gift from God. I said, it's not a gift. It's just life happening to you and me. So we did the thing when she did the treatment, and they gave her a lot of medication. There's some people in here that witnessed that stuff. And I think that was the turning point in their recovery. You know what I mean? I don't do everything the program tells me to do. You know what I'm saying? So I believe that I will probably die with some of my defects. Because I'm 60 years old. I'm not going to waste my time thinking if I'm meeting the standards of other people in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, I'm working this program the right way. So I have to fucking embrace the reality of, look, I'm living in the moment. Because anything and everything can fucking happen. Right? So no moments are the same. Right? So going through the process of my wife having cancer for 11 months and 24 days, having a full-time job, working 12 hours, 5 days a week, going to work, going to the hospital first, then going to work, then getting off, then going back to the hospital. That shit was hard. I remember leaving a fucking meeting and driving down Thompson Lane in Murfreesboro, and I'm looking at the hospital and I can see her room. And I said to myself, not tonight. I'm going home, I'm tired. I felt guilty because I didn't stop. But I can go 24 hours a day. That's the only time I remember not going. And I felt guilty. That shit was hard. People tell you, oh, I'll do this, I'll do that. Man, you don't know what the fuck you're going to do. But I'll tell you this. What saved my ass is what I did in the beginning, building a foundation. I made 5-6 meetings a week for 5.5 motherfucking years. That's what I did. You understand? I wasn't running around here taking vacations and fucking off. No, I was scared. They said, if you wanted a new way of life, these are the things you need to do. You have to build a foundation that's going to sustain the life that recovery going to give you with all the bells and whistles. All kind of shit going to happen. Right? When your kid turn 18, oh, I'm bisexual. All this shit happens. They want to have sex. All this shit happens. Are you prepared for this shit? You understand? See, people see old-timers as, you know, you get friends with them, you think, you don't know their fucking backstory. You judge them, but you weren't there when they was in the fucking trenches. Not using. Overcoming shit. You know what I'm saying? So, in saying all that, my wife is dying. And she said, please don't stand over me like I'm in a coffin. So I had to kneel down beside her bed. See, y'all don't know about that shit. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to get religious on you, even though I am. Right? The God of her understanding was present. I'm going to tell you what made me mad for a brief second. Her sponsor shows up. Right? She's in the house. She's on all this medication. I don't even know the name of some of this shit. She said, girl, it's time for us to do some step work. I said, you fucking crazy? Step work? She got to live through this shit, lady. Step work ain't gonna save your ass. You gotta practice what you fucking know. You know, because when you got an illness, it shakes you to your fucking core. Huh? And let me tell you, the literature tells you when you're going through a crisis like that, the courage that you have is not of your own. It got to be a higher power. Because you humanly can't get through this shit by yourself. So he shows up, unannounced, to do his job. Right? Because you what? You've been faithful to your program.
Yes, sir.
Huh? You didn't pick up no matter what. Anybody can take a cop out. You know what a motherfucking cop out are. You guilty. Huh? I'm going to take the easy way out. I ain't going to take them 25 years off in my motherfucking ass. Huh? She didn't take the cop out. Cost her life. That's a fucking example in how the program works. For y'all motherfuckers that don't know, that take the cop out, that pick up when shit get bad, that's the cop out. Living the program is getting through the shit. Then you want to run back in the room, talk about how you failed. I picked up. We know that shit, motherfucker. You're back. Huh? I'm 60 years old. I told my wife this. I had a dream. And it says, open the safe, get her rings, go say goodbye. But before that happened, the day before, I was in Walmart. And I had the ring on. I wore the ring for about 3 years. And this lady said, oh, you married? Little black lady. I said, yeah. I said, my wife died from cancer. I didn't even know this lady. I told her she died from cancer, where the cancer was. She said, where's she at? I said, in Nashville. That's Hopkins, up there. She said, you know what she waiting on? I said, nah. She waiting on you to come up there to give her permission to leave. I said, what? Then I had that dream. I said, open the safe, go up there and say goodbye. I called my stepdaughter. I said, hey, what are you doing? She said, I'm gonna get ready to go get lunch. I said, I want you out of there. I'm coming to see your mama. Take your friends and go get something to eat. And I went up there on Charlotte Avenue. 18th Avenue, Charlotte, 18th. Went up there, said, "Terry, I'm here." She opened her eyes. And I said, "I'm gonna put this ring on your finger. For the last time, I'm gonna take it off. I want you to know you was a good wife. Thank you for everything." Said the Lord's Prayer, and I left. Time I got back to Murphy, bro, she took her last breath. Just like that. And in an instant, I felt like I was by myself. That shit was painful. Acute pain that I never felt clean in my life. I didn't want to use. Avoid, like, nothing outside of myself could fool that shit. I did. I tried. I bought 2 motherfucking trucks. I bought 2 pickups. Didn't need the motherfucker. But that's, I do shit like that. I wanna get some fucking external shit, right? To fix some internal shit that is spiritual in nature. My spirit. Shit don't work. It didn't work. I did that shit for a little while. I used sex outside. I didn't love them people. I was just fucking trying to get out of that pain. Then I had to sit in it. Then it dawned on me. You got this house you buy yourself. Help some fucking newcomers. Motherfucker was coming through my house like it was a car wash. Letting them move in. Some of them stayed clean. Some of them moved on. Some of them still here. But that was my way of giving back. I stayed there for 6 fucking years. People want to give me my experience. Like, "Hey, man, do this, do this." "Do you have a wife that died?" "No." "Well, I ain't taking that suggestion. I ain't moving out. I ain't selling my house." It took me 3 years to give away all goddamn clothes. I went to motherfucking, what you call it, Plato closet. Gave away her shit. Just gave it away. 6 years passed. I ain't changed shit in the house. I ain't paint nothing. I wanted the shit to stay the same until I got good and fucking ready to leave. And one day, I see the Mexican lady outside. And she's riding around this Infiniti. And I said, "Let me go out here and see what this lady want." I said, "What you doing out here?" She said, "I'm getting ready to sell your neighbor house." I said, "Really?" I said, "What about mine?" That's how it happened. She said, "You got a nice house?" I said, "Come on inside." She looked at it. She said, "I can get some good money off of this house." That was May 1st. The fucking house was sold April 1st. Put it on the market. I was done. Right then and there, I knew it was time to leave. Just like that. No manipulating the situation. And I sold the fucking house, and I had nowhere to go. I was homeless. Nobody would rent to me. I had bad credit. With $200,000 in the bank. Nobody would rent for me. So I moved in with somebody I know for 20 years. I'm still there. For now. And then after that, 7 years after my wife passed away, I came down with cancer. You know what I mean? And that was like, I thought I was gonna die. And I'm one of those guys that I go to the doctor religiously. I drive trucks. They give me a physical every 2 years. That's not good enough. I have to have blood work done. You know, they do your rectum and check for all that. I'm 60. Right? So he says, "You got cancer." And I said, "How are you going to tell me I got cancer? You ain't did the biopsy." He said, "I seen it 1,000 times before." I'm mad with him because he done gave me some shit I don't want to hear. So he said it to my doctor that I've been going to for 18 years. I got the same doctor for 20 years. Same fucking doctor. Why I change it works. She's a lady. And so I'm in the office by myself, and they leave you in there. They leave you in there with your thoughts for like 40 fucking minutes. And I'm in there, you know, mine just bouncing off the wall. And he walks in, he's from Germany, and he got an accent. He walks in, and he looks at me, he got tears in his eyes. And he says to me, "Not you." I said, "Why not me? What makes me special? Huh?" I said, "I tell you what, now that you know I got cancer, what are we gonna do about it? What's the solution to the problem? You hear that? That's some NA shit. Yeah. That's some NA shit. What's the solution to the problem?" He said, "Chemo, radiation, and some gazebo drug." I said, "We ain't doing that. You ain't put me in no more trial fucking shit. What works?" He said, "Chemo, radiation." I said, "When can we do it?" He said, "30 days. Give me 30 days. Let's shrink this thing down some." He said, "I'll tell you what." He said, "I wish all my patients had your attitude." Right? So, they told me what I needed to do. All I did is follow directions. I was on the strongest dose that they had. Started losing a lot of weight. A newcomer said it looked like I was dying. So I don't take that personal. Right? So, the day that I had the surgery, my insurance dropped me. I got no insurance. I'm in there with my girlfriend. I'm down there with another addict. Now I'm crying because I want this thing out of me. And I'm thinking they ain't gonna let me do the surgery. She said, "Hey, we got you. We'll ride about the financial thing later." Right? 6.5 hour surgery. Same hospital that I was in. My wife didn't walk out. I did. I walked out with my wife. New lease on life. Huh? She wanted it. But it wasn't God's will. We all got to overcome some stuff in here. Yes, sir. We all do. You heard the young lady share her story. She didn't take a cop out. She didn't pick up. You know what I'm saying? You choose to use. Ain't no fucking excuse. We use what we want to use. The books ain't no excuse. We plan to do that shit. We make a reservation. Call up. "Yo, Dirk boy, I'm on my way. Got my income tax." That's what I used to do. You know what I mean? It's some real shit. My wife used to always say, "Man, recovery gets real, then it gets real, then it gets real fucking real." Huh? And she would always say, "I don't think my high power for moving, the obsession, the compulsion to use drugs just for today." Today! Somebody that got 18 fucking years clean. I'm going to share a story with you. There's a guy in here, his name's Josh. Josh, yeah. When he got back, my wife was 110 pounds. He ain't never seen a woman like that. This woman was 210, 205 pounds, 5'11". He couldn't even seen her that way. He started crying. I said, "Hey, life didn't stop for us. It stopped for you. You went out and picked up." In 3 weeks, he'd be celebrating 10 years.
Yes, sir.
He was my hand and feet. I was stuck like Chuck. He's like, "I got it." My sister said, "Who is that white boy right there?" I said, "That's Josh." My sister lived in New York for 50 years. She know people. She said, "That's a good dude. Keep him by your side." First time she ever laid eyes on. You got some people in here that will truly help you if you put down all the false pretense of who you think you are and just be yourself. The true value in you being you. I don't have to wear the masks no more. You know what I mean? To overcome what I did, it was truly a miracle. And the book says, we all are miracles. And we see these things happening. In our carnal mind, we still don't believe. You understand? I don't know what's going to take for some people. It took what it took for me, and I'm grateful that I'm here. Right?
Yes,
sir. So when they told me that I was cancer free, and these scans from here to here, all the way down to my ankle, cost $4,500. I owe them people money now. But guess what? They can't lock me up. They can't lock me up with that shit. You know, you get it when you get it. You know what I'm saying? But so they scanned my body. They were scanning my body every 3 months. Now they go every 6 months. Alright? I'm still cancer free. And then when my little nieces and nephew them use that word, I say, hey, don't use that word around me. You know? When you had, quit saying that C word, I tell them. Right? So now that I go in every 6 months, something happened and I had to go back to work. Right? So I go back to work. You know, I got a scar from here all the way down here and all the way over here. I had a doctor operating on the top of my esophagus and then on the stomach. They cut out 20% of my stomach and made it little. So I can't gain weight if I want to gain weight. Right? So now, you know, and then the other one went and moved my lungs to go in there and do what she did. You know what I'm saying? I got a bill for $78,000. I said, damn, boy, I ain't going to pay that. You know what I'm saying? And her friend, my wife's best friend, Sam, was here. Call me all the time. Hey, baby, how you doing? Call me all the time. I inherit all my wife friends. Money can't buy that. They were coming by the house. Check it on me. Them people had a program. They didn't want nothing from me. They had a program. You all right, honey? You okay? You making meetings? You talking about how you feel? That shit mean the world to me.
Yes, sir.
For those that didn't meet my wife, y'all missed an angel. She was good people. No nonsense. Right? So, I get this thing with the doctor with all this stuff. Okay. And he told me that I'm good. Just go live your life. You understand what I'm saying? There's no more cancer in your body. And that's why I have an attitude like I have. I'm going to live every day like it's my last.
Yes.
I made a commitment that I'm not going to let no fucking newcomers take me where they are. And I'm not going to waste another fucking second on your bullshit. If you don't believe what you see in this fellowship, then I'm not here to beat you in the head about it. God bless you, and thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, sir. Please come see. Okay.